It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If mornings feel harder than they should, your sleep might be the reason. The original bamboo sheets by Caraloha create five-star comfort that helps you fall asleep faster and sleep deeper thanks to the natural, cooling, soft benefits of Caraloha bamboo fabrics. No tossing, no overheating, just the kind of sleep that helps you wake up clearer, calmer, and ready to go. It's resort-level relaxation that turns every night into a reset for your body and mind. Start tomorrow feeling better than today. Shop Caraloha Bamboo Sheets now at caraloha.com. That's CARILOHA.com. And wake up to better mornings every morning.
Becker on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Monday morning. She does a fantastic job on the ESPN platforms and SEC Network. We always enjoy our conversations with our next guest. Laura Rutledge is on the line with us. Laura, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Well, we're just plugging away from our homes like we have been for the last month or so.
I feel you.
Yeah, everybody feels, right? Everybody. How has it been on the TV side of things, doing things the way you guys, like when you're part of Get Up, like this morning?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. Almost every morning I FaceTime into the show. I mean, that is legitimately how that technology is working, which is just crazy to even think about. And you know, I think the humorous side, which, look, I mean, I'm trying to find any sort of thing to laugh about at this point to try and keep myself smiling. The best place in my house to, you know, get good internet signal, which is crucial for these FaceTime calls into the show, is in front of this wood wall that looks like a sauna. So the amount of tweets that I get on a daily basis of like, what sauna are you broadcasting from? And the best one that I've seen so far is somebody started calling me Laura Hutledge, which I think is really quite clever as it relates to, you know, this wood background that might look like a hut or a sauna or all of the above. But yeah, it is challenging, but I mean, obviously it's all relative and nowhere near as challenging as what everyone on the front lines of the fight against coronavirus is doing right now.
I guess what you need to be able to do is what we've tried to figure out, or some of us like Chase on this show have figured out and does it really well, is we're doing all these Zoom calls now, you know, after our shows, and when we're having meetings through Zoom, and now you can have these backgrounds, you know, the beach, or you can put people behind you or whatever, and maybe you can start doing that. You can have, you know,
right,
Scenery behind you.
Yeah, I've had all kinds of suggestions for what I might put behind me, and you know, some of them are nice scenes like that. So I need to work on that and see what I can. But now at this point, I'm just, you know, being defiant, and I will not change my wood wall, no matter how many people get mad at me about it.
Good for you. You are so hardcore into the college football scene. So I know none of us know the answers to this, but you talk to the right people. How do you think in the end, as we sit here on April 20th, how do you think this college football season, in your opinion, is going to truly play out, or is it?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, there's so many complicated factors in all of this, but what I would tell you is that I'm optimistic that there will be a college football season in the 2020-21 academic school year. I think the challenges of having it be in the fall may end up pushing it back, but let's just go ahead and put it out there that every single conference right now is planning for football in the fall. That's how they're operating right now. And they're going to reassess at the end of May and early June and kind of see where we are as a country and see, okay, is it realistic to ask student athletes to come back to campus in mid-July to start a season on time, which would be crucial for that six-week time period that these players need to make sure they're not going to get injured when they do come back and play. Is that going going to be realistic. And I mean, wherever you are and however you look at this, you can sort of decide that on your own, right? Do you think that's realistic? And I think that's, you know, something that people are kind of coming to terms with and coming to grips with. But here's the thing. There's a lot of smart people looking at this. Is there an idea that they push the season back? Yes. You know, maybe that's sometime in November. The argument against that that I have heard by people who are very close to this and college football coaches certainly in the mix here is that they don't know what a full weather cycle with this virus looks like. And so it would be catastrophic for college football to start and then have to stop. So they're trying to make sure that that doesn't happen. That's where this crazy model for spring football has come about. And a lot of people, you know, are like, on its face, that sounds so wild and ridiculous. And I was that same way when I first heard it. But I think I'm of the mindset, and a lot of people agree with me here. I talked to one college football coach of a Power Five program just yesterday about this. He said, look, if there's a way to get college football in this year with fans, which that's what the spring would hopefully allow for, then fine, we'll make it work, right? And that's where I think we're all at, you know, and just thinking about college football in general and how we can make it happen. So I would say right now, guys, that spring looks more and more realistic to me just from the standpoint of knowing that it might be safer at that point. But I do know for a fact that all of these conferences are operating as if we will have football in the fall right now. They're trying to plan that way at least.
I know it's not just one conference when I ask this question to you, but you attended an SEC school. You do work with the SEC network. You understand the dynamics around this conference that we cover so closely and other Power Five conferences and other conferences are going to have to deal with this, but you understand the ramifications of if there's not a college football season, how bad would it be for all the other sports? How bad would it be for athletic programs trying to make anything work without a college football season? Because we know how vitally important it is to their budget.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're talking about, you know, just for the public universities within Power Five conferences, about $78 million on average per school. We absolutely have to try and find a way to have a college football season for the viability of these institutions. And then beyond that, you know, the viability of the other sports. And a lot of people say it would be so disrespectful to the spring sports to have college football played in the spring. I get it. I am somebody who has covered basketball, gymnastics, which, you know, is very near and dear to my heart, softball, baseball, all of these sports. I love them. But the reality is that they make such a significant amount less of a profit and sometimes actually are a negative profit when it comes to the overall fiscal look at this thing. So they need college football, and we need college football in some way, shape, or form. And that's why I think, too, what is lost in a lot of this, because initially when people started talking about college football without fans, people said, well, no way, you know, we can't do that. And it's kind of true. We can't do that because the revenue generated by fans is so large. For some schools, it's 80% of their maybe $100 million revenue coming from football. Depends on the school, but especially in the SEC, if we're talking specifically about our league, there's so much money that is made by fans, and also in combo with that, by donors and boosters that are not probably going to be doing what they would normally do if there's no games, right? They're not going to just give money when there's no football games. And so I think that part of it in trying to find a way to not only have college football season, which everybody's working on, but to have it with fans is so crucially important to not only just college football, but these academic institutions at large.
We're talking to Laura Rutledge from ESPN. She does a lot of work for the SEC Network. You can catch her on ESPN every morning. And Laura, one of the things, as you can imagine, was a big topic, and we're watching closely here with Tua, of course, training in Nashville with Trent Dilfer, and some of the players locally here. You reported something to clarify his Wunderlich score. I know as we count down to draft time, always there's such scrutiny on these top prospects. But tell people what you uncovered.
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, I think it's ridiculous that Wunderlich scores start being released. And this happens all the time. And it's just not fair to these prospects, right? They're already being scrutinized at such a high level. And I get it, you know, with a certain amount of talent and skill comes great expectations. Okay, of course. But at some point, let's remember that these guys are human beings. And this is something that the NFL gets really upset about. And I get why they do, because it's ridiculous that these things start to get leaked. I think we can all kind of read between the lines across the board when this happens that, you know, it could be somebody else's agent or some other team, you know, that is trying to get the person to fall. I mean, it's just, it's crazy what starts to happen in the days before the draft. And I think we're seeing that, you know, happen right now. So that's the first thing. But what I did uncover is that Tua, the actual score that is being sent to NFL teams, and that's his official score, is a 19 on the Wonderlic, which is 1 point below the average of 20. And these scores are all across the board, and I'm sure you guys have discussed this. You know, it just kind of depends on who you want to look at and how you want to look at it. But I think what is really the most important is that a lot of teams don't value it when it comes to how these players process the game. And the questions about Tua and his ability to process the game are none. They're non-existent. People are not worried about that at the NFL level. And so the 13 was the initial score that was reported. And that's true. He did score a 13 when he took this test as a junior, which is an exercise that a lot of schools do for their quarterbacks. Just have them take it, and a lot of their players in general, and see what they get. Just no studying, no prep. Just sit down and take the test. And that's where the 13 came from. And then at the combine this year, he scored a 19 on the test. So there are plenty of cases where you look and say, okay, wow. I mean, Lamar Jackson is a primary example of somebody who, you know, is an MVP, and I think one of the most electrifying, talented players that we've seen in quite some time. His score was a 13. That was his official score, and it obviously hasn't stopped him. And I know Lamar Jackson well, and he's an incredibly intelligent person. So I just think it's one of those things that kind of gets thrown in there, and people try to see how it's going to affect a player. But in Tua's case, I am told that there are no concerns from the NFL level about his ability to process the game. I think, if anything, and we all know this, the concerns would be around his durability.
And Laura, my colleagues on the show would back me up on this. They know I love stats, but if you'd have released my scores from my Vanderbilt probability and statistics course in math my freshman year, I don't think I would have gotten hired for the job, for sure. So I get what you're saying.
I'm with you.
Without a doubt. Let's go further with what you were saying, the medical stuff. I know on Get Up every morning, you guys are kicking that around. Where is Tua going to be drafted? It all does center on the circumstances right now, the information that teams get, and, of course, the uniqueness of his injury.
Right, and that's been the key this whole time. I mean, the teams that have been interested in him from the get-go have been very close to this medical information. And, look, I can tell you with extreme certainty. I mean, Dr. Bird right there in Nashville, who is one of the foremost hip experts in the world, has confirmed that the MRI that he most recently did for NFL teams as kind of the official final look at Tua's hip brought forth overwhelmingly positive results. And right now there are no signs there would be arthritis in the hip. But these are things that you just don't know until years down the road. You don't know how durable somebody's going to be. So there's just a certain level of risk no matter who you're drafting. And the risk is higher with Tua when it comes to long-term durability. And so I think that's where, you know, a lot of these teams, and look, the Dolphins have been a team that I know have asked many questions about Tua's health. And this is coming from sources that are doctors close to the situation. But what I think people forget is that the Dolphins could be asking these questions because they want to draft him, or they could be asking these questions because they are a team that is risk averse. And they are. I mean, they're an organization that historically has been that way. And even under different leadership, they've continued to be that way. So there's just going to be some teams that will look at him that way. And it's just the way that it goes. But what I will continue to say, and I truly believe this, and I would say this about other prospects in this draft, it's a risk to take Tua, but it's also a risk to pass on him, because what if he ends up being this, you know, Pro Bowl type, potentially Super Bowl winning type quarterback, which I think he has the ability to be, and you look and you say, man, we had him right there and we let him slip through our fingers because we were too worried. And so that's where this is a really, I think, a bigger dilemma than some people make it out to be. Some just say, oh, well, it's super simple. You don't draft somebody who's been that injury prone. But I think it's a lot more complicated than that, especially knowing how important quarterbacks are at every level, but particularly at the NFL level.
Laura Rutledge is with us from ESPN. And Laura, as we talk about all these prospects, but everybody focuses on the quarterback, and we know Joe Burrow going number one overall, you bring a lot up about Tua. But to me, one of the more intriguing stories in this draft is Jalen Hurts. And you obviously know, working with the SEC Network, his time at Alabama, his entire story, and people continue to say that he could be one of the dark horses in this draft, that he could fall, you know, possibly third, fourth round, but be a really good pickup. How do you look at this? What do you think about Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, you know, I feel fortunate to have covered so many of these guys, and Jalen falls in that category as somebody who I not only covered when he was at Alabama and covered him in multiple college football playoff appearances, but also at Oklahoma. I was the sideline reporter for the Oklahoma side of the college football playoff this past year, which, of course, unfortunately for them, was not very much fun, as good as LSU was. But either way, I've seen Jalen in so many championship environments. And I think first and foremost, what a lot of these NFL teams like about him and what I've heard from that side is just that he's a winner. And no matter what has come his way, he's found ways to win and be a good teammate through that. And that's really important. The skill set obviously is crucial, but I think there are more intangibles that do factor in here. I would be shocked if Jalen Hurts falls out of the second round at this point. I think he will get picked up somewhere in the second round, and he will be a great pickup for somebody. And look, you know, everybody makes the argument of, all right, well, maybe he's that guy that you bring in and you have special packages for, and I'm with that. You know, I'm in on that, right? But I do think he has the ability to, if he continues to work on his ability as a passer, to be a starting quarterback at the NFL level. He has won at every level that he's played in, and I think it's important to remember that he made a lot of improvement as a passer at Oklahoma and then did even some improvement as a passer at Alabama as well, even leading up to that point. If you remember that SEC championship game a couple of years ago, he threw the ball and in order to win that game and get Alabama into the college football playoff. It was really more his passing in that game that made the difference, and he's made improvements there. My final point on that is Lincoln Riley had told me right around the time they were playing in the Peach Bowl this year that he wished he had Jalen Hurts one more year. He thought even with one more year, he could make him so much better as a passer. And keep in mind, they didn't have a whole lot of time together because Jalen transferred in and so missed, you know, some of the time he would have had otherwise. I thought that was interesting that, you know, somebody who's produced the last two number one overall picks and Heisman winners thought that he could even improve Jalen Hurts even more. And I believe him. So I think that if Hurts ends up in the right situation, we really could see him be kind of a bright spot at the NFL level.
Do you think that the success that the Saints have had with Taysom Hill has possibly opened up more opportunities for a quarterback like Hill or Jalen Hurts?
Absolutely. I think that's kind of the new way that we'll see the NFL moving. Now, you got to have the right player to do it. And I think Hurts is even more in the category of somebody who we know can pass the ball. Like, yes, he needs a little bit more refinement in his throwing, but it's not like he can't do it. You know, he's made some great throws in his day and has a unique skill set. I've heard this thrown out there, and like I said, I believe that Hurts can be a starter, so I don't want to diminish him in any way by saying this, but I have heard, like, what if the Ravens drafted him? You've got Lamar Jackson, who's such a dynamic athlete and also a great thrower of the football, and then you've got Jalen Hurts you could put in there. Like, what if they're on the field at the same time? What would you do if you're an opposing defense? It's just kind of fun to think about those possibilities, and I think we'll see more and more of that.
Wow, that's interesting. Last thing, Laura, since we're in these unusual times, we talk about it. In normal circumstances, I never, ever see 1 minute of Tiger King. I've watched it all. I had never seen Ozark. Now I am all in. I'm in a deep dive. I'm all the way to the middle of season three, and I started at the beginning. Quite honestly, I had barely even heard of it. So what's the show you've watched outside of sports?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm not getting to experience the same binge watching during this quarantine that everybody else is because I have a 6-month-old baby, and she takes up a lot of our time, which
yes.
Rightfully so. But I did finally finish Tiger King the other night, and it was what I would say about Tiger King is that I actually enjoyed the after show, I think, even more than the real thing. Like hearing what they all said about watching themselves and then seeing, you know, people have like a new set of teeth and just all sorts of things were very interesting to me from that standpoint. I love a good documentary. So that was pretty fascinating. Obviously, I'm super pumped about this Michael Jordan documentary. So watching the first two episodes last night, and then I'll be, you know, watching that every week. But I don't know. I want to watch Ozark. So I'm glad to hear another endorsement of it. And if I ever get a few moments here and there when the baby's like taking her one nap every week, I will be getting on board with Ozark. That's next on my list for sure. I felt like I couldn't be a citizen of this country though right now, and having not watched Tiger King, like I started to feel a lot of peer pressure that I hadn't watched it. People were making all these jokes that I didn't understand, and I thought I've got to get on board with this. So anyway, yeah, what a show. It was fascinating.
That was adult peer pressure at its best right there. You, Tiger King happened because of peer pressure. You're right. That's did.
Right.
There for a while, I felt the same. I was like, I have to watch it because there's so many jokes I don't get right now, so I need to watch
it.
Well, we've all been there with the six-month-old. You're right. You do have your hands full. Thanks for doing this. Always good to talk to you, and continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, thank you, guys, and you guys stay safe, too.
All right, thank you, Laura. Laura Rutledge with ESPN SEC Network. She does a fantastic job. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.